Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the ultimate crash test dummy to my Jameson Ginger and Cranberry swigging rummy, it's Dan. Now, how are you, Dan?
I was hoping you're going to go like the Hero Mindhunter, since it's more topical, but I'm doing good.
So, we were going to record a couple days ago, as we normally do, but I don't know if I want to say that God stepped in and changed matters, but you had a little bit of an accident earlier this week, as I understand it.
Yeah, I was driving and my car got just annihilated by another car. So, yeah, I wasn't quite up to the recording on Wednesday, or watching the show on Wednesday, or staying up long enough to record the show last night, because I just fell asleep for 11 straight hours when we were about to record. But here we are on Friday the 13th, which is much better than the previous 2 days have been, so.
So, take that, superstitions. Yes, we are back tonight, and thankfully you've got a new car, and you were unscathed, apparently.
I did the car buying thing of the old phrase, you know, get over somebody by getting under somebody else. I did that with vehicles, so.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah, and the vehicle I got was very nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty one. Okay, so we are back once again to talk about Legion. Because we were served up another slice of that brain-boggling pie this week. Now, normally, if folks remember listening to us during the first season of Legion, before we would dig into the main course here, we would offer up a little appetizer with thoughts on last week's episode, you know, cue the music and so on. But I gotta be honest, all of the questions and speculations that I had about the premiere, Chapter 9, were pretty much either dealt with or at least touched upon in such a way in this week's installment, it just doesn't make sense to me to bother with this segment this week. Because my focus really from the first episode was really about revolving around future Cid and the orb and all that stuff. And we really got more into that in this episode. So I felt my comments would have been moot. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's a fair amount of plot going on in this one, like, you know, or like plot development, even though sometimes it's hard to see it through all the window dressings.
Right. So, my thought is, you know, instead of me adding to my typical round of redundancies that I tend to get into here, we should just get right down to the latest episode, Legion, Chapter 10. Now, as anyone who watched last season, and especially those who, again, you guys out there who have been following along with our podcast, you'll remember that one of the running themes and kind of the biggest ongoing question of last season was really determining what was real as opposed to what was dream and what was really manipulated memory and so on. And we saw it manifest in everything from alternate planes of reality to even questioning the existence of certain characters or their afflictions and whatever. Now, even though in the first episode this season, the keywords that they touched upon were like matters of madness and delusion, this episode really swings right back into questioning reality and what is real. And in this episode, once again, most of the time, it's David who's raising that question, whether it's about future Cid or Lenny or whatever. But it really, I think it pertains to other characters' perspectives as well, and especially we, the viewers. I mean, to quote the tattoo that we get shown roughly, I think, midway through the episode. That's when we get another one of those John Hamm narrated philosophical, scientific PSA things. I think it was like the difference between a tick and a bloodhound and how human beings determine what reality is. But the tattoo read, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. So I just think before, you know, as we get into this episode, that's something really to keep in mind whenever you're trying to absorb or interpret, you know, every chapter of Legion. I think you should really be questioning what you're seeing just as much as the characters are doing. Whether you're deciding what is true or what is false, or in a similar vein, what is real and what is fantasy, what is truth, what is lie. I mean, that really seems to be at the heart of what we're seeing here. And the weird, it's not irony, and I'm totally going off and ad-libbing here. It's funny because Noah Hawley's doing this, and he kind of did a little bit of that in the third season of Fargo, actually. So it's interesting to see how this is kind of manifesting in his work. And I kind of personally think it's his way of dealing with what's going on in society over the last couple of years myself. That's my personal crackpot theory, so to speak.
Yep.
I knew you were going to do that after I just hit you with all that blather. Well, you know what? I'm not sure if any of that really made sense, but you know, imagine me saying it with some fancy, crazy light show going on or being distorted, whatever, and then it would then I'll have a nice Legion-y feel to it, and maybe hire John Hamm to say it instead of me, and then it'd be really cool. Yeah, or just some Hamm. You know, I do. So to get to the actual episode, I really love that on this show. That because of not just the style and the stylings and the art direction of the show, but the obvious intelligence behind it, they get away with some of the most obvious visual or aural metaphors that I've ever seen anything, TV show or film get away with. I think we rarely will stop and say, "Man, that's a little too on the nose there, Noah or whoever." But you know, when this episode opens with David meeting with Oliver and Lenny on an actual merry-go-round, which is kind of a pretty apt analogy for David's, you know, his point of view, you know, both before and now. He's his own little mental merry-go-round that's been going on. I'm really enjoying the fact that we're getting. I love the old concept with Oliver being one of the quote unquote faces of Farouk here, because that guy is so much fun on screen every time he's on screen. I'm really getting a kick out of everything with I love the Oliver Lenny combo in a completely different way than I loved what the Lenny character did on her own last season. I'm really enjoying that this season so far.
That's pretty cool. I like to see it.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. What'd you say?
I said, yes, it's pretty cool. I'd like to see as much of that as possible.
Right. Okay. Now I can hear you. So on that merry-go-round, you know, a deal is struck between them. I guess David agrees to help find the body of Farouk, but he wants that promise that no one will get hurt. And then we next see that the deal meant that David's going to lead Division 3 team on this wild Farouk chase in the desert while Oliver and Lenny invade Division 3. I just love how they practically dance on the corridors. While I have to mention it, while they are singing one of my favorite old tunes, you know, it's almost 75 years old, you know, Swinging on a Star. I was so excited when I heard them singing it, because it's just such the juxtaposition of that them singing that song while they're doing these horrible things, basically reducing at least a dozen people to dust and turning one into a pig. I really enjoyed that tremendously. And then I guess separately, I guess Oliver and Lenny confront Kenny and Carrie Loudermilk, and we're once again reminded, if we didn't pick up on it with the turning people into dust, how nearly omnipotent these people are, or creatures, characters are, because they basically take the Carrie Loudermilk symbiotic relationship and turn them inside out. You know, they just kind of flip them. So what I mentioned a little bit about how much I'm enjoying the Oliver Lenny combo, it's something strange about it, because when it was just Lenny last season, especially in those later episodes, there was, I mean, as we've mentioned before, how much we are enjoying Aubrey Plaza's performance, and it's even shocking at times because just I haven't seen her do that kind of work and anything else she's done. But when you make them this combo, and we're not talking about what happens towards the end of the episode when she's with the quote unquote the actual Farouk, but just her and Oliver. Maybe it's because of him being there as well. It feels like there's a higher likability factor with them. Maybe it's that goofy suaveness. I'm not saying I'm rooting for them per se, but it's hard to root against them. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's a very unusual, I don't know,
Pairing.
I can't think of the right phrase for it. But I'm really enjoying it, probably more than I thought I would, because I'll admit I was a little, I wouldn't say disappointed, but at the end of season one, when we realized that the Shadow King, or Farouk, is now within or has taken over Oliver. I mean, we were said. I think we were said more because of the tragic nature of Oliver's character, that he finally,
Right.
is freed from his little ice cube prison, and then, bing, he's taken away again. So that's all pretty much like the first act, and as you said before, this episode overall, it felt like, well, even though it has, I think every Legion episode is always going to have those certain moments, the very Legion moments, which, a little, they get a little trippy, some with the visuals and that kind of a thing. But it felt a little bit more, I think this phenomenon happened last season too. I don't remember if it was the second or third episode. I feel like it might have been the third episode. I'd have to go back and listen. Because we talked about how you have like one crazy episode, and then you have to have one kind of balance it out to be, just a little bit more normal, or just to give us information
Right.
rather than be kind of what the hell is going on here. Because
Well, yeah, they gotta bring us back to Earth every now and then just to keep us from getting just too freaked out.
Right, and this one was very, I mean, obviously there's a lot of exposition that's filtered throughout this episode, and I think it's just maybe a way to get our bearings, just because I think the premiere, as much as I know we adored it, I think it might have left a lot of people going, what? What? That. Could you stop for a second and explain something? And it doesn't have to be Jon Hamm explaining. Can you just make some sense here? So I think this episode kind of gelled well in that sense, that it really clarified certain things. Again, there's going to be so much elements of mystery in Legion that are always going to be present, but at least I think it made it easier to really understand what's going on, and where we're going with this. And there were some surprises, of course, as well. So getting back to the episode, and one of the wackier elements of the season so far, we get Melanie, and I'm a little concerned. It's only two episodes, so I'm not gonna go too crazy with it, but if by mid-season, this is as much as the kind of stuff that Melanie Bird's character is going to be relegated to do. I hope that's not the case, because it does feel like kind of a waste of someone like Jean Smart, who we know
Yeah,
is
I had the same thought. We don't need Gene Smart baked the entire season.
Yeah, especially if, as we said last week, the implication is she's been doing this for probably the last year or so. So hopefully the scenes that we get with her in this episode, so we got a few, are more of an indication that she's going to start, being more of a cognizant person. Of course, we also saw her vaping and getting high again as well, so I don't know. But she goes with Sid and David for that meeting with the basket wearing Fukuyama and what I call the Three Vermillions, who, I don't know, they may or may not be androids. I think, is it Petonymy who says that they're androids? I think someone says it in the
Yeah.
episode, right?
Yep,
But
he says that.
does he say that he thinks they are, or that he knows they are? I think he just, because I don't think anyone actually knows what they are.
Yeah, I think he's just repeating speculation, so it's just hearsay right now and not
Right.
confirmed.
Yeah, I think that it might have been something he tried to. His ability is, because he couldn't go into their memories. Maybe he just, it was like pure data or something like that. I've noticed, and I blame the Mark Zuckerberg memes this week. I keep saying data instead of data when when I think it's like, okay, data is a character, data is the actual information. Remember that, kind of remember that. But speaking of expositional dumps, rather, we get Melanie telling everybody, and thus us, about the whole monk of the Migo order. In a nutshell, how some time ago the mind and body of Farouk were separated, and these monks supposedly hid the body away. So there is this remaining monk who presumably would know the whereabouts of the body. That's why everyone's looking for him. Really focusing on Melanie just for a moment, since we were talking about her, I think it's worth noting that before we see Melanie delivering that big, massive Migo monk expedition, when she was tripping balls on the vapor, Oliver appears to her in the doorway. And so put the thought in my head, since he is looking for the monk, obviously, is it possible that he's kind of trying to use her and slash Division 3 to unearth the guy beyond whatever dealings that they have going on with David? I mean, it seems probable to me that he would be doing that.
Yeah. He's just kind of here to cover his bases, I suppose.
Yeah, so it's interesting that while David's agreed to help them, the rest may be helping without even realizing that's what's going on. Look, it's not much of a theory, I know. I'll have better, although obvious ones later in the podcast. But it was one of those things when I rewound that part back because I think I was watching, I was a little tired, and seeing someone getting high on screen kind of makes me zone out a little bit. So I had a feeling I missed something there, and I went back like, oh, Oliver's talking to her. Okay, there you go. So back to that meeting, Fukuyama and the mustache triplets, they have this pretty big issue with David because they're assessing that there's a 63% chance he's been lying to them about everything. And even with Sid's protestations and Melanie's defense, they're right. I mean, it's not really subtle, when Oliver and Lenny just happen to show up at Division 3 when everyone else is off in the desert, on David's direction. There's a thing with David that's interesting with him lying or deceiving or not telling the full truth, and I think we're gonna have a lot to say about David and his character and where they're really going with that. I'm probably getting ahead of myself by even bringing it up right now, but we're almost there. This is an interesting episode, I think, because even with all these things going on, I feel like they're starting to flip the script a little bit on certain characters. And I don't mean just like the Loudermilk's being flipped inside out either. So it's kind of interesting there. What
Yeah.
were you? I mean, so people don't just have to hear me yapping like the way I am. Up until this point, was there anything that kind of stood out to you or intrigued you before I go any further here?
No, not really. I mean, there was just a lot of, interesting style choices they were doing and, neat camera shots, I suppose. But other than that, there wasn't, a lot of meat and potatoes in the very beginning.
Right.
Unfortunately, more to come.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're on the verge of getting to one of the big ones right now, I guess.
Yeah.
Because again, with the David and his somewhat lying tendencies or whatever, he kind of fudges in why he wants to, well, travel through time, essentially. He does get the Loudermilks to tweak that amplification tank chamber thing, and then he pops into this purpley future room. And speaking of style choices, you get this little jittery jump edit shooting style that makes everything seem just a little bit off, and I have to admit, just a little bit Lynchian to me, which I was kind of enjoying. That's when he sees Future Sid again. So, oh, and reality alert, what I mentioned earlier, the first question David does ask is, "Are you real?" He also had mentioned, I think, in their first scene about Lenny, he was wondering about the reality of Lenny, which is something which we finally get an answer to later in this episode. This is the scene that really where, if you're going to have the major thoughts and theories, I think this is where there's all these little bombs and hints that are dropped throughout the scene. Just the way Sid reacts to seeing David again. And what she says to him, and now she's just looking at him, and now she notes that now he's like the way he was, and the way she sidesteps the question of where or what David's situation is in the future. When her answer to his "Am I dead?" is it's complicated. So we also learn that a week from now, I guess in the present, not the future, David kills Farouk, bashing his brains in. But even more importantly, we're also told there is a much bigger threat. There's something that's killing
Yeah.
everyone. And apparently, it looks like Farouk would be their only hope of stopping it, which would be why she's told David to help Farouk find his body. I'm not sure why she wouldn't also say, hey, you know how I just told you you're going to kill Farouk in a week? Maybe don't. Since he might be our only hope here in this, our little sad purple future. There's a few other things that were kind of fun in this, or interesting in this conversation. I'm trying to remember them now. I know David's unable to read her mind. I felt like there was a little callback to the first episode. She says something, she's talking about the idea of starting out as an egg, which felt like the callback to the John Hamm story in the first episode.
Yeah.
I will say right now, I'm starting to grow irritated with the fact that the entire time he doesn't comment on the fact she only has one arm. It's kind of boring. You know? I mean, I know she's cute and charming, but does she have to be disarming too? Yeah, I know, it's horrible. But it should be disarmed, not disarming. But okay. I know, it's a bad joke. But look, and here's where we can finally have both of us talking. the main elephant, I think, in the room is the identity of this even bigger bad in the future. And I gotta say, from all the foreshadowing to every bit of cryptic and not so cryptic dialogue, looks to me like they're implying that David is the threat in the future. Is that your interpretation of this?
Yeah, that seems most likely. I mean, it's always possible that it could be something else, you know, so they have something to do in season three or whatever, I suppose. But yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards David.
Yeah, it's everything the way about how, how she reacts to him and all the things I just mentioned. And the fact is that with his abilities, someone like Farouk, you know, or aka the Shadow King, I never know what pronoun to use with him sometimes, would probably be the only one who could take on David if he switched over to, you know, the dark side. Feel like they've been hinting and nudging us a number of times, even before this episode, but especially in this one. I mean, there's that conversation that happens later in the episode between David and Clark. There's moments there which are only slightly more subtle than the scene from The Dark Knight when Harvey Dent says, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. You know, so it's all about how perceptions can skew things. Because David is, you know, when he says to Clark, you know, I thought you were the bad guy. And clearly, when the more we've seen Clark and more we hear more about him, he kind of wasn't. So just watching all this and the way David's been acting, everything from his demeanor to the fact that he's a big liar, I'm starting to feel he's, to use a totally geeky way of phrase it, he's feeling a little bit more Anakin to me than Luke, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of it, and since I already skipped way over to it, tell me, am I right? I know during the Clark and David scene, one of the fun little bits is Clark saying that we see everything. Doesn't Farouk say something like that later as well? Or did I just imagine it? I keep thinking that both, yeah, two different characters saying something along those lines. Or am I
yeah,
just
I,
remembering?
I can't remember. Okay. Sorry.
All right. So I can't say that definitely happened because I did make it. I couldn't read the scribbles I wrote in my notebooks. I watched this episode at a weird hour. So if I am able to rewatch it, I'll look for that. So you've got that being kind of a major bombshell scene. And that really leads to the next one, which, you know, leads to David zipping off to that field and that fortune teller booth. But I think he's expecting to meet Oliver there, but instead it's who we now know to be the actual Farouk. There's so many ways that this scene could have played, and one of the things I love about a show like Legion, generally speaking, they always take a turn in a different direction than I'm expecting it. You know, the character, whether it be dialogue or visuals or whatever, Farouk is a much more impish and charming character than I was expecting him to be. Because I figured, oh, they've already played the charm factor with the Oliver character. I don't know if they would do any. This guy was just so different than I was expecting. I really enjoyed it. quite a bit. I also love the idea of him speaking to him, and I noticed he's speaking to him in multiple languages because I was listening to how the accent kept changing, and the phrasings, whatever. So that was kind of fun as well.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of, you know, how Lenny acts. So I'm not like super surprised that this guy, like, you know, just isn't acting like super chill, but.
Well, it's interesting because you'd think on one hand that you would want to differentiate them more, but on the other hand, when we've seen all those scenes, like Lenny from last season, whatever, they're all Farouk technically, you know, when under his control. Or that's one of those things this episode helped to clarify a little bit later on, where the whole idea of, wait, does he assume their identity? Does he, you know, quote unquote, wear them like a mask? Does he have them physically? It's a very gray area with the show, and maybe we can try to figure it out a little bit when we talk about the Lenny scene that comes up just a little bit later. But this scene, which goes from the conversation and constantly about David being frustrated that, you know, he wants, you know, Farouk to really stop at the violence, you know, because obviously he broke his word about not hurting people. Although I was expecting a line to be something like, well, I didn't hurt them, you know, I killed them. But you know, if they're instantly vaporized, I doubt they felt any pain. And the guy who's a pig, he might be happy. He might be happy as a pig in the, you know. But I did enjoy hearing Farouk quote John Lennon. I didn't see that one coming either. But what did you make of the, what do we call it? Do we call it the fight scene? I don't know. Is it a fight scene? Because it feels like they never really fight, if you know what I mean. Dan?
You know, it's like, you know, like a wrestling type thing. So maybe it's kind of like, you know, like wrestling with your demons. That kind of, you know, it's a metaphor for that, I suppose. But, you know, I wouldn't really call it a fight. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like the wrestling with your demons, and something, especially because in a weird way, Farouk being inside his head all those years almost represented his, would be a representation of his demons, literally and figuratively, of his demons. The fact that Farouk actually says, like, oh, it's refers to it being homoerotic was really funny. that they decided, okay, in case anyone's thinking that, we're just gonna say it. But then they go from that to, you know, now Farouk's a samurai and now David's a tank, and then Farouk's a, I was tempted to say he's a smoke monster from Lost, or is he a whirlwind, or is it a tornado? I couldn't really figure out what he was, because it wasn't like a thick column of smoke. It was kind of all whipping around, but it was a fun kind of back and forth thing there. Again, different than stuff that we would typically see. But after what I would say was a kind of a pain-free confrontation, David, you know, agrees to help Farouk to go find the Migo monk, since he, again, looks like he'll be the key to the actual whereabouts of Farouk's body. And Farouk, again, promises, he grimaces, he's not thrilled with having to promise it, he promises he's not going to hurt anybody. I predict that promise won't last more than an episode, if even that. But after that, and here's something that it's interesting, I think we were wondering about a lot last season. We get, I think, some major insight into the reality of Lenny, which something David himself questioned, you know, not only last season, but at the beginning of this episode. So I think now, if we weren't 100% positive before, we can say now, there definitely was a Lenny. Lenny did exist at some point in time.
Yeah.
But I wasn't expecting what this... I mean, I'm trying to piece together what the situation is. Because it seems to me that she's kind of trapped there. You know? You know, being for, you know, to serve him, act as him or his emissary or however you want to say it. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Now, Farouk, and we're seeing him, and that's what he looks, but they're trying, but I'm guessing what we're seeing is his mental projection of himself, for lack of a better way, because they're trying, because they can't find his actual physical body. That's the whole point. That's what they're looking for. Now, Lenny's here, but he tells her that her body is dead. So what is it of Lenny that's here? Is it her mind or something which makes her, kind of similar to Farouk, which seems to be like kind of a metaphysical impossibility? Because I figured that was something that you can only do with a godlike being like Farouk or whatever. Or instead of or be going beyond metaphysics into something which is almost has a religiosity aspect to it, is it Lenny's soul that's trapped there with him? So I was just trying to figure out, or is it just one of those things that we're never going to be too sure about, which is probably what it is, the case. But what were you, th what did you think of the whole Lenny? I mean, and she, oh, by the way, she's great in the scene. I mean, it was great because she got to do something that was just a little bit different than just being the bad gal. I mean, she got to be more like she was early on with David when they were still together in the asylum. But you also, first time I felt a little bad for her because I hadn't realized that this was her situ this was the situation. I just thought he was just masquerading as her. I didn't think she was actually trapped with him in a way. The way Oliver, I guess, would be, but that is Oliver's physical being. Since he kind of took his body, even though we've seen multiple Olivers, which, whatever, maybe I don't know what that's supposed to mean. So, what's your take on it?
I'm not sure exactly what exactly happened here, but my just based on the information we have, the way I see things that happen is like, Farouk is, his ability, he's kind of like a parasite, so he just kind of like hangs on to, different people. So I guess maybe that, like, he like got with Lenny when she was like, a junkie doing whatever, and then like it actually was her physical body that was in rehab with David in the first couple episodes, and that's what died. So then, like, when she died, then Farouk and her like got transferred to David, and then they ended up off doing whatever, at, in the latter half of the season. Oh, well, I guess they're with Oliver now. So that's just kind of like how I see it, I suppose.
Okay, yeah, I can see a lot of that makes sense to me. As much as we can make sense of this, it's one of those things I don't imagine is ever going to be diagrammed out for us to understand. But it's interesting. But again, this is as much as we've ever gotten answer-wise, in my estimation, on the nature of Lenny and what's going on here. Because I was always, and I think they even remind us about that question by having David ask about her in the very beginning of the episode, because he's still not sure, Now it occurs to me that I probably did skip any number of details going through this episode where we are at this point, because you can only talk about so many things, whether it be like the multiple Olivers I just mentioned, or what about those multiple David voices that we're hearing? Because I keep forgetting. There's kind of like more than one David that they keep touching on. he has he you have one David who has a spiky hairstyle. And one, and I know we haven't really gotten too much into talking about the Loudermilks and what's going on with their now inverted universe. I am enjoy I am in, is enjoying the right word? I guess it is. I'm enjoying the stuff with the Loudermilks just because it's giving these two side characters something more and interesting to do, as opposed to just being, soldiers in the army, so to speak. And there's something very sweet and tragic about those two anyway. And the performances certainly don't hurt either, because Bill Irwin's always fun to watch, and I'm really enjoying her more. She has a, I know she, I know the actress has a very interesting name, and I'm forgetting what it is.
It's Amber Mid Thunder.
Is that actually fun? I knew it had some like thunder thing in it,
Yeah.
but I think they're giving her a bigger palette to play with this so far with this situation. So I'm kind of enjoying that.
Yeah. You know, plus, and of course, she ages while she's out, so it's interesting to see that she presumably is aging now.
Yeah, it's funny because obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but most anyone watching the show knows that this is tangentially connected to the whole X-Men universe. So it's kind of funny when she's got those streaks of white in her hair. It's like, wait, isn't there an X-Men character who has hair just like that? Is it Rogue who's got the white streaks
Yeah.
in her hair? I can't remember if it's her or
Yeah.
Kitty Pryde. I'm not always that too up on the X-Men stuff. Even though I will defecate a brick if they ever do figure out a way to get Patrick Stewart on the show at some point, since
Huh.
he is his dad, just saying.
I think he'd be down with making a cameo. We'll have to
Oh,
see.
the only thing that could work against Patrick Stewart making a cameo would be if he decides that his performance in Logan should be the last time he plays Professor X, and that should be that. Which would be a legitimate thing for him to do. I say bullshit, do it anyway, but
Yeah.
Oh, another little thing I skip by, and I know we have a big thing at the end of the episode, so I'm saving that for a second. Last week I mentioned how they do these visual flourishes on the show, and sometimes, one has to assume that they're not just being, what's the word? That the wacky visuals are actually literally happening, as opposed to them just being kind of being fancy or something. There's a moment when I think it's right after Melanie, Sid, and David have spoken with Fukuyama and the Three Vermilions, where we suddenly get the point of view inside Fukuyama's basket, and it's like a slideshow going by. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I was struck by that because I was like, wait, is that actually what he sees when he's in the basket? Or I wasn't sure because they went to you know they it's like they switched it like a little slideshow, and then the last slide they kind of went to that scene. So I don't know. I was like, wait, I'm not sure if they're being cute or if that's actually what's going on in there. I don't know. I'm gonna go with it. That's actually happening just because I figure on this show it's better to assume it is real than not. I'm not really sure. What else? Is there anything else before we get to the well? Okay, and I'll admit, child of the 70s and 80s, I'm very familiar with the Banana Split song, so it did kind of make me laugh a little bit to hear that on this episode as well. I didn't watch it. I think it was a little before my time. I think it was more of a 70s thing, and I don't think I was watching stuff like that. I was more into Superhero and Bullwinkle and stuff, but I did enjoy it. So the last big thing in the episode, which happens pretty much right after Melanie kind of advises David that he should just run away with Sid, which kind of shows you where Melanie's head is at after the last year, where she's no longer about, saving the world. Like, yeah, screw the world. It's not your responsibility. You should just go run away or something. That's David going to tell Sid, at least some of the truth that he's been keeping from her. And the fact that Sid is still playing body switching games with the cat sets up that really ridiculous moment where David's talking to the cat, and I was like, okay, he's got he can't do this more than for a few seconds. This is just ridiculous, but I was kind of laughing at it because it was probably one of the more pure comical moments I thought in the entire episode. But he's going there to pretty much tell her about meeting with future Sid. But there's this visual thing that's going on during this scene, which I think, I mean, if there was an explanation for it that I missed in a previous episode, I don't know. There's all these giant, these floating pointing fingers that are floating in the air above the building. Which looks something like they look very Monty Python-esque, or and they're vaguely reminiscent of like the evil giant pointing finger from the Beatles' Yellow Submarine movie, even except they don't have a grin on them. I don't know what the explanation is for them. All I know is that if you watch that scene, more often than not, it looks like the majority of the fingers are all pointing right at David.
Yeah.
So maybe I kept thinking, it's like, hey, it's him, you know, just guess you're wondering who the threat's going to be. Him.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's subconsciously telegraphing himself, maybe, too.
I am wondering what the deal is with all those things. I mean, what could be the explanation for that? It's a very strange thing. Because this is on the roof. They're at Division 3 now, right? Why would they have these weird... I don't even know what they are. I mean, are they balloons? Are they actual... I don't know. And much like the mustaches on the androids, I don't think we're going to get an explanation for them either, quite frankly. Anyway. So, yeah, he tells her about the situation with Future Sid. And I guess Sid decides to believe Future Sid because she believes in David. Oh, by the way, I once again got a little angry. It's like, and he doesn't tell her about the arm. Anyway, you're just doing this on purpose. At the end of the episode, we do see that the Mego monk that everyone's looking for, he's actually hidden himself away in that room where all the catalyst sufferers are chattering their teeth. So... I'm assuming we're actually gonna hear this guy speak next week. Then again, he's a monk. Maybe he's done a vow of silence and he never gets to talk, which is okay. So that was pretty much the episode. I enjoyed it. I felt like this was more of a let's slow it down and explain it a bit more kind of an episode. So it didn't have quite the frenetic pace or dizzying kind of sequences quite the way the previous one and many Legion episodes do. Even though when he travels through the time chamber or whatever we're going to call it, the tank, the sensory deprivation. It's not really sensory deprivation. I shouldn't ever refer to it that way. But they do some fun stuff where it's kind of like that funhouse distortion of David. I think at one point when he's being stretched apart, he actually looks... like the creature that we thought was that we referred to as the Shadow King last season, I thought. But otherwise, I mean, I thought it was a solid episode. I just don't think it was quite at the level of the first one. But I kind of knew it wasn't going to be, so I kind of liked it. What was your feelings and thoughts on it?
It's kind of hard to compare the two, really, because I mean, you know, one's like, you know, just like a stylized, like, hey, everybody, Legion is still crazy, and the other one's like a bit more of like an information dump with like things to speculate on in it.
Yep.
But you know, it's it's good. It's just, you know, apples and oranges, I suppose, as these things go for Legion. But I definitely found it, you know, enjoyable. I give it a solid A minus, I suppose, if I was rating things in the letter scale, which I'm not.
Yeah, because I didn't even think of doing that last week, so I'm not like, I probably shouldn't do it this week. I probably would be in the B+ category. So here's my concerns a little bit. Thankfully, they're minor concerns, you know, in terms of the overall show, but still some concerns. Like I said, mentioned the worry about the Melody character and Jean Smart. More so for, or just almost as much, or more so for Tanami, because it feels like they barely use the guy, and he feels like he should play a bigger role. It looks like he's going to get used a lot in the next episode, so I'm looking forward to that. But it seems like kind of a waste otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, I mean, I'm pretty. Once they've laid out this whole situation with the Future Sid and the body and the implication that David may end up becoming the villain himself, those are the things I really liked about the episode, because it gave me something firmer to focus on for the season. I got a better sense of what the arc of the season was going to be from this episode than the actual premiere. I think the premiere was more there. It's exactly what, as you put it. It's like, just to dazzle. It's like, hey, remember how amazing we were? Whoa! And now it's like, okay, now we're going to explain some shit to you.
Yeah.
But still good, but not, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing the next episode. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Right, yeah.
No. Anything else? It feels like we kind of ran through that one.
Anything? Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I was going to say something about the Lauder Milks, but I can't remember what it was. So, shoot.
Yeah. Well, the thing with the Lauder Milks is, so Carrie can be within or inside Carrie now, but she can never, but she can't reverse it. So that, hence what you were saying. So now things like age are going to catch, will start to kick in for her. I remember her mentioning this last season. So I guess the same thing happens again, where the reality of being outside, you know, she's going to have to do things like eat and go to the bathroom and so all the stuff she's been able to avoid. Oh, by the way, some of that sounds, as I'm sure I said last season, some of that sounds like a dream to me. Oh, to never have to go to the bathroom again? Oh, that'd
be amazing. Oh, man, that'd be sweet.
Oh, my God. Oh, the top 10 wishes. Top 10 wishes. No, not really. Top 20. I am curious as to how they'll figure out how to flip them around. Oh, speaking of curiosity, something didn't touch on. Just thought of it when you mentioned Loudermilks. So there's this... There's the whole thing with the orb that captured David to begin with. And they seem to be saying that at least some of the technology involved in it looks like something that Carrie Loudermilk would have done. So I guess it's kind of giving more credence to the idea that in the future he creates this, and it is future Sid that uses it to go back in time and capture David. I mean, I guess it kind of helps put that whole thing together. So, yeah. And therefore, I'm feeling more. I'm a bit more likely to believe that that is a future version of Sid after this episode than I was in the first episode. Yeah. First episode, I was kind of like, sure, go on. I'm sorry.
Well, of course, that means that there's also a chance that David isn't the bad guy in the future, and they just need him to like. Make a different choice like a week from now, because if he was the bad guy, it would make more sense for them to send some kind of weapon back in time rather than just say like a briefly capture you so we can talk to each other in an uncomfortable round room way.
Right.
So,
but if
it's possible.
It's interesting, but if Sid's doing it, I wonder if she would believe that she can change the course of his life, his destiny, rather than, because she wouldn't want to kill them, you know, her man.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
See, I'm fascinated by the idea of taking the character who is set up ostensibly as the hero of the show, and you're doing things to push him to become the villain of the show. I mean,
that'd be sweet if you know, Farouk and like Sid, or Farouk and like Lenny were like, you know, the good guys by the end of the season. That'd be fucking awesome.
Can you imagine watching a show where the hero ends up looking like he's the villain? Oh, wait, Walter White? No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Even though I never really believed him as the villain on that. Well, except for some of the stuff with his wife. I forgot. Yeah. Kind of hard to forgive that. Anyway. What would Walter White say to the Me Too movement? Anyway. So, all right, then. I say we just then wrap it up here. If yep. you've got nothing else. And so if you enjoyed this podcast, you'll enjoy hanging on our Facebook page. It's a Serious TV Drama podcast page. You can like the page, join the page, join the conversation about shows like Legion and so many others. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And as I think Dan has pointed out, I always forget if you just punch Serious TV Drama Podcast in Google, you might find us in a whole bunch of places. I mean, we seem to pop up on YouTube, apparently, which I didn't even know that was happening. some other sources. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to find us. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast, STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. We will be returning next week to do the next Legion podcast. We are aware there are at least one or two others that we are meaning to get to. We owe certain folks out there a Traveler Season 2 podcast. We really will eventually get to a Crown Season 2 podcast. And we were planning, and we still are planning to do one covering all the different DC superhero related shows for the last that have been on for the last several months. Not just the usual ones on the CW, a few others as well. It's just a matter of time, and well, trouble on the highway sometimes keeps things from happening, so.
That's how it goes sometimes.
That's how
It's
it
fine.
goes.
Gives us gives more of us chances to catch up on some of the comic shows and
Yeah. It's amazing. I think the comic book shows are the only things I am caught up on, and I'm behind on like everything else I'm supposed to be watching, but I'm just been tired and just been busy, just so much stuff going on. Anywho, no one needs to hear me whine about that. Okay, so hopefully you enjoyed this podcast for the most part, and you'll enjoy hearing our next one. And on that, I'll say good night, Dan, and good night to everyone out there.
Yes. Good night. I was thinking about saying something about a snore, like a blizzard that's coming. I'm just like, I'm not going to. And then I just did. So good night, everyone. Stay warm.
Maybe if we just ramble incoherently for the next 5 minutes, it could end up being the best part of the whole podcast. Or we could talk, or we could spend 5 minutes talking about Ready Player One, and we're gonna go see it again tomorrow. No, spoiler. All right, anyway, I'm gonna shut up. Good night, everybody.
Yep, good night.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. Kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace. He has no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets caught.
But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. New kind of jumped up slippery fish, and all the monkeys are in the zoo.
Every day you meet quite a few.
So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star.